welcome in everybody to the How Not to Be a Youth Pastor podcast. Your favorite two youth pastors talking every single week how not to be youth pastors, hoping that all of our listeners learn from our many myriad mistakes and just overall tomfoolery and shenanigans. Am I right?
You are most definitely correct this time.
Yeah, there's a first time for everything. Like they say, even a blind squirrel finds a nut.
Amen to that. Favorite saying. I actually have that tattooed on my lower back.
That makes sense. The other one is, what's the other? Broken clock is right twice a day.
Wow.
You ever heard that one?
No. I'm going to steal that.
You think about it, you're like, yeah, I suppose so. It would be right twice a day, wouldn't it?
What I love about it is when you say that to, especially like youth students, like we sit here and try to figure it out. They're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
What? What does it even mean?
They usually never try to figure it out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's exactly right.
We got a sponsor today, Derek?
Yes, we do. I'm feeling fat and sassy today thanks to our good friends at Chipotle Mexican Grill. I was trying to look up their slogan, but I don't know what it is. But great food, good people, problematic digestive issues. Chipotle's got it all.
Apparently, their motto is food with integrity.
Yeah.
That's a pretty lame...
It does
slogan.
Have integrity, and as a person of integrity, I think it's important that we support them for the most part. So that's what you and I did. We, Kyle and I were looking for places that just had good food integrity today, and we landed on Chipotle, and we're happy about it.
Yeah, I had Chipotle for lunch, and it was excellent. I'm sorry, I found a Reddit thread of what's a good slogan or tagline for Chipotle.
Oh boy, I can only imagine some of the things that have come up.
One of them is Chipotle.
No, yep.
You'll have spicy diarrhea in a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
Others that I'm not going to say on the air.
I'm sure they have certain words that we don't try to make a habit of using.
There's one. Somebody commented, good try, Chipotle marketing team. Because somebody posted on Reddit, what's a good slogan for Chipotle? It's somebody replied, good try, Chipotle marketing team. And the original poster responded, sorry, that was so not hip of me. The OP responded, ha ha ha, it's just for a school project. I'm an advertising major. And that commenter replied again, that's exactly what a Chipotle marketing team would say.
Dude, while
I appreciate that.
While Reddit can be an absolute wasteland sometimes, there are some really funny people on Reddit every once in a while.
Oh yeah. That's true. The internet in general. Most of the internet is a wasteland.
Yep.
Every once in a while. I mean, my wife, if my wife could lend one piece of advice to the world, it would be social media sucks and everyone should stop using it.
Because she doesn't have any socials, does she?
She technically has Facebook, but she doesn't ever do anything with it.
Yeah. Good for her.
But I think every once in a while, a video pops up on Instagram Reels that I'm like, that is pure gold.
Yeah, and then you send it to me.
Yeah, usually. I have like four people that I send Instagram Reels to, and that's pretty much the only thing I use Instagram for anymore.
Whenever I get a reel from Kyle, just so our listeners can be aware of this, one of two things is going to happen. One, it's going to be something that makes me laugh extremely hard, or two, it's going to be something that is a direct insult to me. And sometimes they're one and the same, those two things together.
I'm trying to pull up
our chats.
Chats to see.
There's also usually some kind of sports stuff in there as well. Mm-hmm. Usually, especially during the football season. And it's not always like actually helpful sports stuff. It's just random things and tidbits that people pick up.
Yeah, it's there's some good ones in here. There's like a real fun golf one where it's just a lady swinging a golf club, but it looks somehow worse than Charles Barkley. I don't know. I didn't even know that was possible, but
Oh my gosh. Well, let me jump into the quick question of the day while you get lost in our dumpster of chats. Kyle, have you ever been embarrassed asking for help? And if so, what did that look like?
So, I honestly think the answer is no, because I don't ask for help.
There is that.
So, I feel like are you sure you did not coordinate this quick question with my wife? Because one of my biggest pet peeves is being commissioned to go to the store to get something. Honestly, Menards is the one that gets me the most, where it's like, hey, I need to go to Menards to pick up fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where it is in Menards. And I surely am not going to ask one of their employees
where
it is.
Why would you do that?
But the thing about the Menards app, like, it'll like drop a pin of the general location in the store of where it is.
Uh-huh.
Like, Lowe's, to their credit, you search something up in Lowe's, it'll be like, it's in this aisle and then this subsection of the aisle. Like, it's a
detailed map.
Like, at the most, like a 5-foot section of the wall that you're looking on. Menards is a little bit more loose with their information. And so I will just wander around the same part of Menards for like what feels like an hour and not be able to find it. And then either I go home and extremely ticked off because I didn't get it because I couldn't find it.
Naturally.
Or I finally find it and then go home extremely ticked off that it took me an hour to find it.
Yeah.
I don't ever ask for help because I don't want to.
I think that's stubborn. A husband thing, because here's what came to my mind immediately is when our oldest was a baby, like in the carrier the whole nine, we decided to take him to a pumpkin patch, apple orchard, one of those dealios. He was like 2 months old. And it was Minnesota. It was kind of like when it was just starting to get cold. So we're talking like low 40s, that kind of deal. So we go to this little pumpkin patch and I take the wrong turn. So I turn down this dirt road after the pumpkin patch. That's important here. I turn down this dirt road to turn around. So I turn down the road, you know, kind of like kick it in reverse to do a 90 degree back so then I can go out the other direction. Well, I didn't realize that the ditch that I was about to back into was an extremely large ditch.
Sure.
So as I back off the road when I think my tires are going to slowly dip into it, it basically, the tires fall and I like the frame of my vehicle, of my car, is resting on the side of the road.
Sure.
So I tried to like punch it and get out of there, dug myself a hole. This truck kind of drove by, saw that we were stuck, tried to like yank us out. And for like an hour and a half, we sat there and my wife's like, call a tow truck. Like, we're stuck. Call a tow truck. I'm like, no, like, I don't want to pay for a tow truck to come all the way out here. So I call my dad, who's got some connections in the area, so on and so forth. Finally, like, we are so stuck that we know we need a tow truck. So we call a tow truck, much to the chagrin of my wife, after like 2 hours at this point.
Right.
And it was so embarrassing for a tow truck driver to show up and pull me out on a bluebird day with no rain and no moisture. And the most embarrassing part was we got all said and done. Our insurance covered the tow bill.
Sure.
So could have literally avoided that had I just not been a little prideful. So needless to say, I learned my lesson.
Yeah.
That day.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think that YouTube has spoiled us into thinking we can do anything.
That's accurate, yeah.
And sometimes it is best to ask for help.
Most times it's just good to ask for help, which is why we're talking about that today. How to ask for help. And I just blatantly dropped Kyle's wonderful transition piece
there. Lobbed it up for him. I don't know if you guys have ever been in a church softball league before, but they pitch the balls real slow.
Yep.
And
And we still...
You still miss.
Yeah, I was going to say. I rarely miss. I just... I hit just a hard ground ball right into the shortstop, and then he throws me out at first. But anyways, that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about how you need to ask
for
help.
We're maybe here to ask for other people's help.
Yeah, I think so. Apparently, with speaking, it's almost like we do this for a profession.
We do have, before we dive in, but yeah. I will say that we do have a, coming up in the next couple episodes, we have an AMA episode where we will answer all of other people's asks for help.
That's exactly correct.
So you can, message us on Instagram and how_not_yp, and we will answer any and all of your questions.
Ask us anything.
Anything.
Literally anything.
We want all the weird questions.
Yeah, one of which we've already gotten from Kyle.
Yep.
For me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to respond to it.
Darn it.
Because I don't know how.
Yeah, that's fair. Anyways.
How do we ask for help? Okay, so full disclosure, we have spent a lot of time on this podcast emphasizing the importance of you, that being the youth pastor, just being healthy, physically healthy, emotionally healthy, spiritually healthy, all that good jazz. And so I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here, but over the last year or so, I've kind of been on this journey of learning how to ask for help in an area of life that is not always easy to talk about. And the intention for this episode is far less about here's my story and I want everyone to know it, and it's far more about as a man, sometimes we struggle to actually ask for help and humble ourselves, and we don't even know where to start, where to go. Maybe we do know where to go, like we should ask the Menards man, but we just don't want to. And so here are some of the things that kind of I have walked through. And so the thing that the elephant in the room, the thing that I have struggled with the most to ask for help in is this arena of mental health. So for those that don't know, I was clinically depressed in 2013. Like, and I mean that literally. Went to the doctor, got diagnosed, severe depression, severe anxiety, medication, therapy twice a week, the whole nine. And kind of came out of it. But then every year, Minnesota, this winter is just a little hard for me just because there's less sunshine, there's less daylight, there's less vitamin D, all those kinds of things. And this year was actually really good for me because I kind of learned how to ask for help. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, is how to ask for help, primarily in the realm of when you're struggling with various emotional things, spiritual things, so on and so forth. And we kind of got four easy steps for $19.99, and we'll see if we have any bonus features to throw in.
I feel like this advice is worth more than $19.99.
Yeah, I do feel that. I mean, you'd pay five times that for a counseling session, so.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It's also maybe a cheap counselor.
Depending. But like, here's what I wanted to kind of just get out there is what has been a really good development in the last few years in the arena of mental health is I feel like the stigma is kind of slowly starting to come off. Like more, it feels like more and more people, whether it's on TikTok, whether it's commercials on TV, whether it's just daily conversations, like the stigma of seeking out counseling, seeking out therapy, just being okay, not being okay, has started to come the right direction. We are far from being in a good, healthy spot. I think there's still a lot of people that struggle with it, but I feel like we're making steps in the right direction.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
And I'm not meaning to... I fear this question is going to lead some people to just question the entire episode, and that's not my point.
Sweet.
But
what else is new?
Has the stigma gone too far the other way? Okay. Where instead of we don't want to talk about it, it's... not only do we want to talk about it, but I'm content making it my entire personality.
I definitely think that's happened. And not, I wouldn't say that's a universal.
No, truth. I wouldn't. I don't know that I'd even say that it's, the majority.
Right.
But I think a large subset of the population, because I think we've talked before in the past about, the difference between clinical depression and a mental state of sadness.
Yeah.
That you could call depression if you wanted to, but that's different than clinical depression. And, you know, for me to just say, I'm going to, like, yeah, I'm depressed, I'm anxious, I'm anorexic, and I'm going to make that my entire... It's not just something like that is a part of me that I don't want. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm going to make this a part of my identity.
Right.
Because it gives me attention, at least I know what it is. Like, I don't love it, but it's comfortable. I don't know where I'm really going with that, but that's the thought that's in my head right now.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I've seen both of it, and I think that's what's tough is you can't necessarily say this is definitively, and you're not saying this, but I'm just saying people in general, it feels like everything, there's two camps. The camp of, everyone's so soft these days, and you know they just got to toughen up, and you know, because everyone does hide behind identities. And you have the other side of the spectrum where it's like, you know, it sometimes can feel almost like I don't want to get better, you know. And they might not actually say that with their mouth, but the reality is there is this kind of lethargy when it comes to actually arising out of this state of difficulty. And whichever way you take it, I think what it does is it insults those who actually are walking through things, you know, because like I do know people that are clinically diagnosed with mental illness. And for you to say you're really depressed sometimes feels like an insult when you're just like you hit a 2-day stretch that was pretty hard, you know, like that can sometimes feel insulting in the same way when people say, I know what you're going through. Like, I once lost my dog, so I can't imagine, like, we're all that different when you lost a kid. It's like, it's different. You can't say it's the same thing, you know?
Not how that works.
And so I definitely do think that stigma, for good or bad, has changed over time, you know? But the thing that I have kind of come back to is... what is hard to reconcile sometimes is when pastors or church leaders, for that matter, walk through seasons, there's this added pressure going, I'm a person of faith. So like, I should have faith that God can heal me, or I should have faith that I can make it through this. Or there's also like one thing I walked through during my initial stint of it was like, the joy of the Lord is my strength. You know, like I have hope through Jesus. I shouldn't be feeling this way. So I should just like figure out how I can think my way through this. And it's not always that simple. And so I don't know, Kyle, if you've ever seen that in your circles, but sometimes while the stigma is kind of getting unbroken, I feel like it is lagging behind with Christians or church leaders, for that matter.
Yeah, I think that... There's more work to do, and like Derek said, it absolutely is kind of lagging behind in our realm. I think part of that might have to do with the I guess it's almost a weaponization of the Holy Spirit, where it might be like, hey, I'm depressed. Well, it's probably because you don't pray enough, and nobody wants to hear that. Mm-hmm. So then they just hide I think sometimes any struggle a Christian has gets painted as, well, your lack of faith is what's keeping you in that struggle, which is
totally
not how that works.
Right. Yeah, and that was something I had to kind of just wrestle through. And so just fast forward to kind of where this episode is like I really want this to be something that's uplifting and encouraging, and far less about just the depravity of mental health, because there is a lot to that. But when you walk through something like this, you have to learn that mental health is not something necessarily you fully ever recover from, and it just never comes up again. It's you figure out how to manage it, and you figure out how to supersede it before it becomes unbearable. And so the four things that I have learned in this season of life are things that I would say, whether you're depressed or not, whether you have a history of mental illness or not, doesn't matter. Like, these are all just pretty four universal principles that whether you're just hitting a spurt of difficulty, whether you're just in a season of where you're exhausted and you're weary and you just, you need a little refreshment, all four of these things come into play here. And so the first one is going to sound so obvious, but I think it needs to like hit us between the eyes. And so I'm going to word it as this. When you need to ask for help, you need to actually leverage friendship. And like what I mean by that is I feel like even in the pastoral world, we have a lot of friends that we do life with, that we laugh with, that we get along with at various functions at different events. But I think there's a lot of us that actually struggle to have true depth with our friends in such a way that like we can be like, dude, I or ma'am or whatever it is, like I'm going through something really hard and like I just need to tell you about it, you know? And that's what I've appreciated about what Kyle and I have is like, man, there's really no sugarcoating with us. Like when we catch up, it's like, give me the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there's really no need to paint it or whatever. And I feel like you and I have been able to have some very real and raw conversations. And the thing that I have written down here that has probably been the biggest revelation for me is the depth of your friendship with somebody can be easily defined by this. Is it weird if I tell them what's really going on right now? Like when you're in the thick of something, whether it's a marital dispute, whether it's, you know, a struggle with a temptation, whether it is, you know, grief or loss, whatever it is, if you sit there and go, I'm not going to reach out to them because that just would be a little weird, maybe that friendship's not as deep as you thought it was, or maybe you need to work on that component of it. But in this season, there's been many times I've gone like, I just need to just talk to somebody about this, like a friend of mine that knows me, knows my heart. And it's incredible how when you even just offload that weight, you feel way different.
Yeah, there's a, you know, for our non-Midwestern listeners.
We hate you.
Yeah, you're inferior. But when you, yeah, I'm sure other cultures either do this or have an equivalent, but you walk by somebody in a hallway or on the sidewalk that you know, like, hey, Derek, how you doing? And Derek responds, good, how are you doing? And you respond, good. And that's the whole conversation. And I have literally had that conversation with people where like we are 10 feet past each other by the time we end that exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not, you know, turning and looking back at each other. Like we're both continuing to look toward the direction we are going, which is the opposite way of each other. And it's just kind of a cursory, like, yeah, like
I know you well
enough. Yeah, it's an extended hello. I know you well enough that I should, you know, say more than just hi, but we don't need to dive into more than that. And I think it's, you know, speaking to what you're saying, if you're going to ask somebody, like if I ask you, how are you doing? I don't want you to just say good and let that be the end of the conversation. But if somebody asks you and you're willing to give them more than, you know, that cursory response, if you're willing to give it, then that's probably a sign that, you know, this is a different level of friendship.
Yeah.
And if you think that they actually genuinely want to hear it, it's probably an indication of a different level of friendship.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Sometimes like when you're more desperate, you kind of just tend to unload on anyone that will listen. And it's kind of critical that you at least are strategic about who that is, because what's difficult is if you take a leap of faith and say, I'm going to trust this person with this really difficult thing, and they don't reciprocate that, it creates some hurt and some pain and some betrayal, if you will, that people can tend to feel. And so it's kind of vital that you have that mutual understanding going into it. And dude, I don't know if this is just my perspective, but I have seen so many people in ministry that are kind of like a mile wide, but an inch deep in the sense of friendship. Like they know a lot of people, like they have a lot of acquaintances, mm-hmm. a lot of peers and fellow pastors, but like when push comes to shove and they need something, I'm amazed at how many people don't know where to turn, because we all do the same thing. We're united under this umbrella of we serve the Lord together. But to truly traverse that and have not just like crisis support, if you will, but a true depth of understanding and faith development, you need that friendship. I mean, it's, again, it's something I appreciate about our friendship is like, as much as we just shoot the breeze about stupid stuff, like we have some deep theological thinking conversations that kind of just like spur us to think about our faith and our thought patterns and our beliefs. And
like whether or not Thor's in the Bible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, we need to do a better job, pastors, of just having legit friends and friends that can understand you and understand the demands that that brings. And so, like, as much as there's a lot of value in having friendships outside of ministry, because that's a whole other thing, you need to have friends that aren't immersed in the church world. You also got to have church immersed in the church world, and we've talked about that in length.
But yeah, that's true. You gotta. I think one of the keys to finding a variety of in your friendships is actually seeking out a variety in your friendships, and they've got to have different backgrounds. They've got to have, you know, different interests, and your friendship needs to be based on different commonalities. If you're on staff at a church and every single friend you have is just your youth leaders, there's a dynamic that every single one of those friendships is going to have, but then there's also dynamics that those friendships are going to be missing no matter what.
Yeah.
So another what is this tip 204 on
204?
Did we decide this is maybe like $39.99?
Yeah, I think that's a good one. You're not just casually pulling that out.
Professional pastoral counseling. You know, this is something that we don't want anybody to dismiss just because I'm healthy enough, or I don't think that needs to be for me. I think it's something that we would encourage both healthy and struggling people to consider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that I would go so far as to say every single person must meet with a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, again, like we were saying earlier, there's a level of mental health talk within the church that we do not, it's weaponizing scripture to mm-hmm. say, hey, you're a pastor, you should not need counseling. When in reality, if you look at some of the crap pastors have to carry,
mm-hmm.
they need a healthy place to offload that.
Right. It's exactly right. And what I love that you just said is something, whether you're healthy or non-healthy, there are benefits to it. Because what I've seen with pastors especially is they go to professional counselors, but professional counselors, let's call it what it is, they're expensive, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're probably not getting out of that office for less than $100 a session, you know? And so when they're in the thick of it, they go a few times and start to feel better, and then they just pull off, you know, as they start to feel better. But just like physical illness, if you are supposed to take antibiotics for 7 days, usually you feel a lot better after 2 days.
Yeah.
But you need to carry that through to completion to fully eradicate that. Counseling is the same way. And what I have learned in this season of life that was a literal game changer for me is I found a professional counselor that was a retired pastor.
Hmm.
And that was like a game changer for me, because I've had Christian counselors in the past and they're awesome. Like, we have that same foundation of biblical understanding, everything else. But like, what was so encouraging and just refreshing was when I shared some of the demands that ministry puts on me and like how I struggle through them, there was already that emotional equity there. He understood. He's been through it. He knows exactly what it's like before, during, and after, and he could speak directly to that issue.
Yeah, and I think the other, you indirectly touched on this, but I think one of the most important things with counseling that nobody, very few people understand, is that the right counselor will make all the difference. Like, go to a counselor. I don't know what the magic number is, and maybe you could speak more to this, but like go to the counselor for, you know, 2-3 sessions. And if it's not a fit, go find a different counselor.
Yep.
Like you're, it's, you know, you're not locked into like the first counselor that you go to is the one you just have to go to now. Like find, spend, you know, maybe it's 2 sessions with the, or even 1. Sometimes you can get a feel for like, yeah, this isn't gonna, I think the kids would say that this isn't going to be a vibe. And so, find a different counselor and keep trying until you find one that, you know, you truly, you feel comfortable with, you feel like you connect with, and, you know, you can trust. Because if you don't trust your counselor, then you're in trouble.
Well, and it's funny you say that. So actually, before I found this person, I went to a clinical office, you know, where they had counselors, sat down, had an hour intake session, and I got out of there and I told my wife, that's not it. Like I great person, like Christian counselor, like checks all the right boxes. But when I sat down, there was just not that same connectedness that I would, that was missing. I knew it was off. And so like that was a one and done for me with that person. And it kind of pushed me to the next one. But here's another kind of caveat to that, that I would kind of push you to. When you're trying to find that right fit for a therapist, you got to find somebody that's going to challenge you in all of the right ways. Because this, like, so full disclosure, like for those that watch online, I'm a small dude. Like I am 5'8", 140 pounds, like small person. And like, I'm insanely sensitive. Like internally, I'm incredibly soft skinned. Like the smallest rebukes or critiques usually send me into orbit. You know, like I'm very sensitive. So as a result, in my past, like just kind of that more soft-spoken therapist has been a connection for me. This dude is from the South. He's got like a military haircut, twice my size. And I was like, and he just like, there was no mincing words. He was just like, this is what I see. This is what I think you got to work on. Like, this is where you're at. And like, there was a part of me that was like, I don't like this, you know? But the more I sat like with my wife and chatted through like what he was talking about, she goes, no, you need this. Like, you need this, this, tell it how it is, be raw, be authentic. He's going to step on your toes, but that's what you need right
now. That's kind of disheartening to hear, because if I knew that all you wanted was for me to sit here and tell you all the flaws in you, like in a very straightforward manner, I could have done that and charged you half of what he's charging and still been great with it.
Dang it.
I feel like I really missed an opportunity there. But
it was like, it was so profound, because like he did it in such a way that was like, and we stuck it out and like, I've met with him 8 times since then. And like, we're now at a spot where we meet every 2 months, you know, cause like we're in a spot where I'm feeling much better, but we're staying in connection. And like, it's just so helpful. And so like, if you're like, maybe like, you know what, Derek, like, that's a good point, but like, I just can't afford that right now. I get it. Like there was a stretch for me, for us too. But the thing is like, if nothing else, find a pastor that can mentor you that's 40 years ahead of you. Because while he brings a professional sense of therapy to it, what I've gained the most from him is being able to tell him the current ministry struggles I'm going through. And he goes, yep, been there. Like, I've been there. I know what that feels like. Here's how I got through it, and here's how I got through it better the next time. And just like, and this might shock you, but it worked. Like, it's incredible how we just think we are the first people to ever walk through the situation, when in reality, there are hundreds and thousands of pastors that have been through this countless times, and they're going to tell you and give you tips how to navigate it better, and it makes a huge difference. So again, mentorship is not necessarily something that's a brand new concept, but you have to seek it out and be willing to go through that, because it's a long process. Like it was from start to finish, about a 4-month process of finding the right fit for me. But when I found the right fit, game changer.
I like it. Number 3.
How to ask for help.
Let the good Lord in.
Yep.
You know, it feels really stupid to actually say out loud and say that, like, this is something that maybe people haven't thought of. But I think it's something that people haven't thought of. You know, I did a sermon series a while back going through not all of the Psalms, because that's a lot, but we just had like three or four that I preached through. And one of the big themes of that sermon series was that God wants our emotions. God wants to hear, all of that stuff mm-hmm. from us. And I think that, I think journaling can be a great outlet for stuff like that. I think like just spending time in prayer, praying while you're driving, just giving God our raw emotions mm-hmm. and saying, God, I'm sad.
Yeah.
This is what's going on in my life and it makes me sad. This makes me frustrated. This makes me angry. I remember saying in that sermon series that, God knows what we are going to ask. He knows the prayer request that's coming before we say it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I quoted C.S. Lewis, or it was somebody smarter than me, when I said, how arrogant of us to think that when we pray, we're giving God new information. And so like, it wasn't like we focus so much on the prayer request portion of our prayers, when really God's looking for communion
mm-hmm.
and he's looking for, let's share those emotions and just sit in the rawness of that.
I've realized we are so good at intercession for other people. We've stopped asking for God to move in us ourselves, and like that's what has really kind of wrecked me in this season, is understanding that intercession for other people, praying for other people, seeking God's goodwill for other people starts with understanding that he has that same love and affection for us as well.
Yeah.
It's hard to genuinely seek and ask God to be there for someone going through a tough thing when we're emotionally depleted, And I think that there's a moment where you have to set your own self aside, but after a while, self-sacrifice becomes self-neglect, that's something that has come out of one of these therapy sessions, is when you are so self-sacrificial, after a while, you stop taking care of yourself entirely. And it's amazing how you can be so close to God in proximity, but so far away from him emotionally. And like just not being tuned into what he's actually wanting to speak to you. And so this is such an easy, simplistic concept that we just have to get to the bottom of, because until we truly let God minister to us, we are going to be ineffective over a long period of time. And we have to understand that his love for his people is not just stopping at our door. Like, we serve, yeah, but he wants to be there for us as well.
Yeah, we've gotten three easy payments of $39.99 from everybody. So after making $119.97,
easy.
Derek, I think it's time for one more. So what do we got?
This is the one that probably is least popular, but perhaps one of the more effective in terms of prevention. And it's, you have to let someone critique your patterns. I will be the first to say, this is going to sound like a negative, but it's not. My wife is really good at calling me out on stuff, and it's never fun. Like I said this, Neosporin isn't comfortable, but it's effective. Like, no one likes having an open wound and going, let me just jab this cream in there, because it just feels good. Like, it doesn't, but it kills all the stuff. And, while sometimes mental health is just something that is thrust upon you circumstantially, whether that's grief, loss, you name it, there are many times mental illness is a byproduct of prolonged negative patterns and habits in your life, and you need to have someone in your life that can critique those and help you set them on the other side. Like, I'm sorry, like getting 5-6 hours of sleep a night is not setting you up for success. It's not, if you have kids and it's all you can get, I get it. But staying up until midnight every night and then waking up at 6, if your mental health is degenerating, that's probably a contributing factor. If you don't have, if you're so busy in your life doing so many things, you don't have time to sit down and just breathe and do nothing, let alone sit down and breathe and spend time with the Lord. That's not just microwaved devotionals. you're going to be depleted. Yeah, and you get where I'm going with this. Like, we have to find people that love us enough to get uncomfortable with us and say, I love you, but like, you got to do this. You got to figure this out. Like, and not figure this out as in your mental health, but you have to figure out some of the triggers and some of the things that are causing you to go into this spiral. And I'll be the first to tell you, my biggest vice is how busy I am. I am at my worst mentally when I am overloaded with work. And like, for those that are in ministry, you understand that's part of the gig.
Yeah.
You know, but like, what has been a transformational thing for me is understanding I am not responsible for being everything to everyone. There are some people that can wait until tomorrow. There are some things that can wait until next week. And they might be met with people that are disgruntled or disapproved, but at what cost? At what cost is your mental health like going to take an absolute hit? And, you know, so like, it has taken a long, long time of working with my wife, working with my therapist, working with my friends to get them to say, slow down. Like, quit saying yes to everything. Quit feeling like you owe everybody everything all the time. Like, serve, sacrifice, but don't be like self-neglectful. Like, you need to have time where you're resting, you're recharging, and you're receiving from the Lord. And I kind of want to end with this. Like, I'm preaching coming up here about the feeding of the 5,000. And it's so profound to me now being in ministry, putting myself in the shoes of the disciples prior to the feeding of the 5,000, because they had just come back from their ministry journey. They were spent, they were exhausted, and people kept on coming. So much so that the Bible says they didn't have time to eat. So then you have them get into the boat, and who's waiting on the other side of the lake for them? 15,000 people, you know? And so it's so profound to me that in that moment, Jesus had compassion for the group, but he also had compassion for the disciples in the sense of showing, I'm going to take what little you have, what little mental strength you have left, and I'm going to multiply it and recharge you too.
Yeah, I think there's a truth in there for pastors that if we do, no matter how much strength or weakness we have, if that's what we're relying on to do ministry, then we're in trouble. If we from the start are relying on God to sustain us in ministry, I think that's going to go a long way toward creating a healthy environment in the first place. I also think that when it comes to, you know, somebody else critiquing our patterns, it's kind of the same thing as finding a counselor. Like, it's going to take a little bit of time to figure out what exactly the best method of communication is there. You know, for Derek and his wife, for example, if his wife, you know, immediately when she recognizes something, she goes and tells Derek, well, that happens while Derek is preaching, that's a problem. And so, you know, I think that there's a need to figure out, okay, and also, like, it might be recognizing, you know, I want to tell somebody this, but I recognize they're not currently, they don't have the capacity to hear it. And so let's push this conversation off a day or two until they're not quite as, you know, no pastor wants to receive criticism at 12:30 on a Sunday afternoon.
No. Or first thing Monday morning.
Or first thing Monday morning. Yeah. Like, hey, let's connect on Wednesday and talk, or, you know, whatever it is. That's where I think some tact in delivery is necessary.
When you also have to understand who you're going to take critiques from. Because there are some people that will critique you that don't know you and don't know the situation. Like, I'll tell you straight up, a critique from someone that I haven't connected with in years is going to go a lot less for me than the woman I spend every single day with, you know, like that. There is a lot of that too. And so, cause how many of us know there's
real
a lot
quick,
of critiques. Yeah.
I can't let that go by without, maybe giving a word of encouragement. What you just said was that the critiques that you get from your wife are going to, actually, I think you said the woman you live with. I assume you were talking about your wife.
That is correct. Thank you for clarifying. Could be your daughter.
Could be your daughter.
Okay.
Those critiques mean more than, you know, the critique from
fellow podcasters.
Yeah. Just the random, like the person you haven't talked to in 5 years.
Yep.
That's how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But is it?
That's good. That's super good.
Like, so often we, there's a saying, never take, what is it? Don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from.
Okay. Yep.
Which I also think is a great benchmark. But so often the criticisms that we take and run with the most, the ones that we let affect us the most, are the ones that come from the person that's completely out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are closest to us, we actually discount their advice. It's the same thing on the flip side. Like, I could tell my wife every day that she is absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, so it's easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
If a random stranger tells her that, in a non-creepy way, but uh-huh. like if a random lady in our church is just like, wow, you're really beautiful, that's going to mean 20 times more to her, yep, than any time that I say it.
No question.
And that's not a dig on my wife. That is, I would imagine, true with most married women.
Yep.
And, you know, we do the same thing. Like, my wife complimenting my preaching,
mm-hmm,
means something different than, a youth student that was there for the first time complimenting my, yep, preaching, or, you know, whatever. But we've got that backwards, and mm-hmm, we need to, I think we as an entire society, we're challenging the whole world on this one. 8 billion people. Take stock of how much words mean to you from the people around you.
Yeah.
The people who are closest to you, both their praise and their criticism should mean more to you than praise or criticism from people that you don't know or hardly know.
That's so good. Yeah, because it's wild how you can, and it's even a frequency thing too. Like, I've had it to where, you know, on the way out the door, half a dozen people said, oh my gosh, that spoke to me. But one person on the way out critiques the theology I spoke on this one little mini. Like, this literally happened like three weeks ago. Huh?
Were you wrong?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was more so I said something in a way that it could have been construed in a different way. And so they were alerting me to that.
Yeah.
Do you want to take a venture at what I spent the next week like just stewing on? I promise you, it was not the 6 compliments.
Yeah,
it was
all that one. All the ways people could have taken what you said wrong.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And like, it's like, I'm sorry, but like, that's fleshly, yeah. But don't tell me that's not Satan just being annoying. You know, mm-hmm, like that just taking one little seed and just hammering that home. And so I think what Kyle said is so critical. Like, you have to actually receive the compliments from those that love you, know you best, as the most profound, because it truly, I'm not going to speak for Kyle, but I'll speak for myself here. Like, I have a wife that's very, very similar to his in the sense of beauty, and it's not, you and I both know the sincerity of our heart. It's not just like, oh, she probably needs this, so I'm just going to give her some lip service. Like, no, it's real, it's raw, and we need to understand it goes the same way in reverse.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good place to wrap this one up. I don't have a whole lot else to add.
You're kind of a genius, Kyle. What can I say?
I don't like how much positivity you've talked about our relationship on this episode.
We should go back to just hating each other.
We don't have to hate each other. We just have to be way more sarcastic than we are.
Okay, well,
right,
you're,
now.
You're so ugly.
Thanks. that does it for today's episode. We appreciate everybody hanging out with us. I think it's about time that Derek and I delete all of the maps apps off of our phones so that we can find our way around by ourselves.
Goodbye.